Everybody, once again, this is another edition of Radio Free Kafiristan. This is a radio program that is dedicated to rightly dividing the truth between Christianity and Islam. And oh boy, are we going to do it today. We examine the evidence for both of these faiths in order to arrive at the truth that leads us to thus end, thus goeth I. Shalom, peace and blessings. Of course, this is your humble host, Eric Thecker, for coming to you live from the cavernous depths of the Kafir Cave in Dar al-Harb, Kafiristan. We are here every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time. That would be Chicago time. And 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and that would be, well, that would be New York time. And I don't even want to guess. We just had this. I don't know if it's just me or everybody else, but this year springing ahead, I tell you what, it has got me so disjointed. I can't hardly think. I mean, I'm just sitting here and we were talking before the show and I am just dragging along. So hopefully we can put some pep in the step and have an interesting and good show tonight. Today, let's see, I'm live casting on StreamYard. And I am live casting, and that live casting on StreamYard, I'm trying to do three things here at one time, and it's not working out for me. There we go. There's Mr. John. And by live casting on StreamYard, we're on Facebook, on the Cross and the Crescent discussion group Facebook page and Radio Free Kafiristan. And then if you go over to the Cross and Crescent discussion group on YouTube, you will find us there also. Also, all of these shows are uploaded to our website. Yes, we do have a website. It is, I would go the website is crossandthecrescent.com. All one word, no spaces. Crossandthecrescent.com. Spell crescent correctly also, because I had some guy tell me, I can't find your website. Well, you spell spelling crescent wrong, for Pete's sake. If you don't know how to spell it, 2021 after all. Okay, what else were we going to say? Kafiristan. I make a play on that word. Because if you remember, a kafir is somebody who does not heed the beliefs and prescriptions held by the religion of Islam. And a lot of people give me flack about using that name. And if you don't want me using that name, well, then you need to take it out of your lexicon and your lexiconic application when your fellow co-religionists refer to unbelievers. And then Kafiristan, of course, is a play on the words where I say that this is Kafiristan, where we do not have to heed the prescriptions of and beliefs of Islam, kind of like where they do in Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, all of those bastions, and Egypt too, because we got John Isaac here tonight. Don't want to forget old John. All those utopian places where human rights and religious parity and freedom exists. So tonight our show is about violence. Violence that we find in the Bible and violence that we find in the Quran. And before we get to that, I just want to give like a real 35,000 foot view of the violence that we find in the Bible versus the violence that we find in the Quran. When we look in the Bible, there is, especially in the Old Testament, if you look in the Pentateuch, the first five Bibles of the books of the Bible, there is a ton of it. If you look just in the first couple chapters of Genesis, for crying out loud, you want to find violence? Well, how about killing off the entire human race, save eight people? That's pretty violent, if you ask me. And plus all the little animals and the fluffy puppies and rabbits that died along. But all of that was killed according to the Bible, in the Noahian deluge, the flood of Noah. We also find violence in other parts of the Bible. We find it in 2 Samuel, David being violent. And the violence that we find mostly in the Old Testament is descriptive. It describes what is happening, what God is doing or what God is commanding or what the Jews themselves are doing. And it's giving us an overview of, you know, what was done and partly why it was done. But in the Quran, on the other hand, when we find violence in the Quran, we're going to be discussing that also, it is prescriptive. And what I mean by prescriptive is that the violence that we find in the Quran is sunnah. If Allah says that you can't subjugate, fight those who do...
Hadood Allah, or sunnah. Quran, you're talking about Quran. It's not sunnah, it's Hadood Allah. So this is what Allah prescribed.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that. What's it called? Hadood Allah what?
Limitation of Allah, the Hadood of Allah. This is what the prescription or prescribed things of Allah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you for that, Adam. But what Allah's describing, fight those who don't believe in Allah or the last, that is these acts of violence. And my question would be, and this is probably a good starting point, is where do we find Jews today or Christians today using verses from the Bible to go out and violently subjugate people? Where do we find that? And the reason why I pose that is because of the type of violence that is in the Bible, as it is descriptive. We don't see any Jews going out today killing people and taking all of their virgin daughters and marrying them, even though that's a very popular story that Muslims like to use. Whereas we do find Muslims, and Adam will attest to this as far as what happens in Pakistan with forced marriages, going out and grabbing Christians and forcing them to do things or committing violence upon them. Because why? They have these admonitions in the Quran. So this topic tonight is brought to you because John Isaac thought that this would be a good idea to speak about it. So I'm going to turn the mic over to John, if he doesn't mind, and he can get us started on the topic tonight. Now, I just want to let everybody know, John Isaac is not dead, but he doesn't have a Facebook account anymore. So he's not like Adam. Adam, they killed Adam or made a death certificate, so they had to shut down his account. But at least John, they didn't kill. But he doesn't have a Facebook account. All right, John, go ahead.
Hi everyone. Actually, I lost my account in Facebook. It's nothing serious. I can make account any time, at any moment in the day. It's not important. But I would like to ask who reporting me. What is the benefit? Do you think that you will stop us from speaking or from exposing Islam or from what? I can do any account without any problem. Anyway, we'll go to the topic today about the violence in the Old Testament and in Quran. I'll speak about two verses the Muslims cares about them too much, and in debates always taking these two verses and speaking about them. First verse in Numbers, book of Numbers, 31:15-18.
31. Hold on. Let me bring it up here. Everybody can see what you're saying. 31 to. Hold on. Hold on.
15-18.
Okay. Got to share my screen.
13-18.
Okay. 13.
How will you bring up all the chapter? It's like a chapters. Numbers chapter 13-18.
It's 31.
Oh, you're talking about just a few verses, okay.
Okay, so, all right.
15-18.
Okay, go ahead.
I tried to read it.
Okay, you want me to read it beginning in verse 15? Is that what you want me to do, or 13?
Yeah, but it's number 31.
31. Uh-huh. The slaughter of Midian.
Okay. Yeah, let us go from 14, 13. And Moses, Eleazar the priest, and all the leaders of the congregation went out to meet them outside. I can't see from here.
I'm sorry, outside the camp. Let me get this off of here.
Okay.
Sorry, outside the camp.
Yeah, okay. And but Moses was angry with the officers of the army and commanders of thousands and the commanders of hundreds who had come from service in the war. And Moses said to them, have you spared the women, all the women? Behold, they caused the sons of Israel through counsel of Balaam to be unfaithful to the Lord in the matter of Peor. So that plague took place among the congregation of the Lord. Now, this is a verse that Muslims like much. Now, therefore, kill every male among little ones, and kill every woman who has known a man. However, all the girls who have not known any man, keep them alive for you. And the rest of the verse. Muslims like to take verse 17 and 18 and speak, look, Yahweh, ordering people to kill, ordering Moses to kill all women, kill all men, and take young girls, virgins, to make them sex slaves. I didn't see sex slaves here in the verse at all. But this story doesn't begin in number 31. Story begins in Numbers 25. Numbers 25 is telling that men of Israel or children of Israel made fornication. Yeah, yeah. He has said before, when Israel remained at Shittim, the people begin to commit infidelity of the children of Moab, for they invited the people to the sacrifice of their gods. And the people ate and bowed down to their gods. So Israel became followers of Baal, of Beor. And the Lord was angry with Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, take all the leaders of the people and execute them in broad daylight before the Lord. So that the fierce anger of the Lord may turn away from Israel. Then the story begins in Numbers 25, where the men of Israel made the fornication. They go after the women of Moab to worship the Baal of Moab. And as a result, God punished the people of Israel in Numbers 25. He ordered Moses go execute all the leaders who did that. And in number 31, he punished the women and the men who pushed or pulled the men of Israel into sin. Then it's punishment. Punishment for worshiping the idols of Moab. And God didn't say in number 31, go take these young girls. Just keep them for yourself. When they grow, if you'd like to marry them, you can marry them according to Deuteronomy 21. Then these two chapters, 25 and 31, is related to each other. 25, Israel made a big sin.
Do you want me to go?
And 31, the punishment of Moab.
Yeah, may I please add to this? You're absolutely right. And I would say the story actually began in Genesis 15. If you look at Genesis 15, verse number 15 and 16, you will see that the whole story is being pre-described by God, that this is what is going to happen. Let me read it over here. You, however, will go to your ancestors in peace and buried at good old age. But in the fourth generation, your descendants will come back here for the sin of Amoraites. He has not yet reached in its full mature. So God has already pre-described that 400 years or approximately four generations later, you will become sinful and you will be sinners and you will not be doing what you are supposed to do. Then we actually read in Leviticus chapter number 18 and 20, two chapters describes their sins. They sacrificing their kids to the Baal, and you would see they will burn the hill of Baal where there will be burning fire near, and then the hands which are stretched out the Baal idol, they'll put kids and make them crisp hamburgers. That is how they will sacrifice kids to them. So God, in rebellion to all of this they are doing, God gave them 400 years to repent, and then at the end, when it comes to Numbers, God really said, okay, now is the time to finish this whole generation off, so that no man can say that I belong from this generation. So God finished that generation so that a new beginning, a new start would happen. And that is the ultimate mercy of the God for his people at that time, just like it says in Quran as well, and Muslims believe that, because now we have to talk about Muslims as well. In Surah number 11, verse number 25-42, and Surah Nu, which is Surah number 71, Allah is talking from 1-28, when for Allah destroyed everything in flood of Noah. So if flood Noah is a problem, then why is this a problem? That's my point.
Well, and that's what that was kind of the point that I was making at the beginning. If we want to talk about God being violent, or there's violence in the Old Testament, if they're going to point a finger at these other verses in Leviticus, as you described, or in Numbers, as John went through, then they're going to have to turn around and point a finger back at themselves, because the flood of Noah, which would be the ultimate destruction of people, violence committed against people, is we find that also in the Quran.
Shall I show you Numbers as well in Quran?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sorry, buddy?
Yeah.
Let me show you Numbers in Quran. Quran chapter number 5, verse number 20-26.
Chapter number 5.
And you can
five.
Read any tafsir on this, and you will see the whole idea, because Quran, everything is so dramatically stupid, because Allah doesn't know Jack, so he is talking everything in this said or that said. There is no location, there is no nothing. But when you read the tafsir of Qurtubi, and in Arabic, obviously, then you will see that more correlated to these numbers. So let me just read that on my side, because they are like 6 verses, so I'm going to read them. Oh my people, I'm reading Pakhtal, by the way. Oh my people, remember Allah's favor unto you, how he placed among you prophets. Which prophets? Allah doesn't know. And he made you kings and gave you that which he had, which he gave not to any other of his creatures. O my people, go into the holy land which Allah has ordained for you. Turn not into fire, for surely you have turned back as losers. They said, oh Moses, a giant people dwell in there. You know the giants of Numbers, chapter number 13? You know the giants? That giant people dwell in there. Right? And lo, we go in till they go forth from their ends. When they go forth from their ends, then we will enter. Then outspoken two of those who feared, unto whom Allah has been generous. Enter. So two. Who two? Allah doesn't know Jack. Enter in upon them by the gate. For if you enter by it, lo, you will be victorious. Remember the whole number, chapter 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. Everything is described there. What are those giants? Why you are entering from the gate? How you are entering from the gate? You will be victorious. So put your trust, if you are indeed believer. They said, Moses, we will never enter while they are in it. So go thou, your Lord, and fight. So Allah said, go fight. So what do you mean by fight over here? So these people will go in and do what? Fight with the tongue? No, it's a fight. We will slit here, he said, my Lord, I have control of none but myself and my brother. So distinguish between us for the wrongdoing. For Lord said, for this the land will surely be forbidden for them for 40 years, and they will wander in the earth, and we will rest of grief not over the wrongdoers. So it's already there. Go read the Tafsir.
Which Tafsir are you talking about?
Tafsir al-Qurtubi. Tafsir doesn't have all the details. That's the problem. So you have to go to Tafsir al-Qurtubi. And even Kathir, not in the English version, because once again in English they don't actually tell you everything. In the Arabic versions you have all the more evidences on that. But this is everything. If you read Numbers, you will see all of these things over there. How can Allah describe in 6 verses? Allah's Quran is so compact. There's nothing explained over there fully. So, yes, John Isaac, the mic is again yours, buddy.
Yeah, also I'd like to bring another verse from Quran to show that Quran itself, Allah accepted or ordered the children of Israel to do jihad.
Amen.
Let us see Surah 2, verse 246.
That's a lot of verses.
Yeah.
Okay, there you go. No, you don't, because I don't have it up on the screen. There we go. All right, do you want me to read?
Because I'm using cell phone. It's going very small.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize you're on your phone. Okay, which version? Sahih, Pixel?
46.
Yeah, but...
Yeah, that's... I have not considered that. Yeah, that's one. Anyone? Okay,
let's do Sahih International. That's fine. Okay. Have you not considered the assembly of the children of Israel after the time of Moses when they said to the prophets of theirs, send to us a king, and we will fight in the way of Allah? He said, would you perhaps refrain from fighting if fighting was prescribed for you? They said, and why should we not fight in the cause of Allah when we have been driven out from our homes and from our children? But when fighting was prescribed for them, they turned away except for a few of them, and Allah is knowing of the wrongdoers.
Yeah, then Allah ordered the children of Israel to fight in the way of Allah or make jihad. Then why Muslims asking us why all this violence? It's Allah who himself confirmed in Quran that he ordered the Israelites to do his jihad.
These
verses clearly show that.
Exactly. And if you read 4 verses after, you will receive 1 Samuel chapter number 8 to 17 fully over there. So read the rest of the 4 verses as well.
Read all of the 4 verses?
Next 4 verses, 246 you already read.
Okay.
All right. Read those 4 verses.
All righty.
49 and 51. Like right now you are in 1 Samuel chapter number 8. So if you read the rest, you will go all the way till 1 Samuel chapter number 17.
1 Samuel 8, you said?
8 to 17.
So okay.
246 is 1 Samuel 8. 247, 48, 49, 50, and 51. And you will have all the fights of Goliath and everyone in it.
Okay. You want me to read those right here?
No, why not?
Okay. No, I got it. Okay, 247, it says, and their prophet said to them, indeed, Allah has sent to you Saul as a king. They said, how can he have kingship over us while we are more worthy of kingship than him, and he has not been given any measure of wealth? Now, hold on a second. Hold on.
Yeah, forget that. There is a twisted story. Don't worry. Carry on.
Okay.
Carry on. It's a twisted story.
No, okay. Because he's okay. I'll just read. I'll shut up. All right. I'll let you explain.
No, you're not supposed to be using your mind. And,
well, I was like, so, what is he talking about? He's just going from here to Saul. Okay. All right. This is an accurate, and he say, okay, he said, indeed, Allah has chosen him over you and has increased him abundantly in knowledge and stature, and Allah gives his sovereignty to whom he wills, and Allah is all-encompassing in favor and knowing. 248. And their prophet said to them, indeed, a sign of kingship is that the chest will come to you in which is assurance from your Lord and a remnant of what the family of Moses and the family of Aaron had left, carried by angels. Indeed, that is a sign for you if you are believers. 249.
The Ark of So basically, you are reading Sahih International. You can't see Ark of Covenant. In Pachtal, you will actually read Ark of Covenant. Doesn't matter. Carry on.
Okay. And when Saul went forth with the soldiers, he said, "Indeed, Allah will be testing you with the river. So whoever drinks from it is not of me." And who isn't the isn't this the story of Gideon?
Yes, sir. Gideonites. Carry on. See, I'm telling you.
Wow. So whoever drinks, this is amazing. This is truly amazing. Okay. And so whoever drinks from it is not of me, and whoever does not taste it is indeed of me, excepting one who takes from it in the hollow of his hand, a very few of them. Then when he had crossed it along with those who would believe with him, they said, "There is no power for us today against Goliath.
Yeah, see?
And his soldiers, but those who were certain that they would meet Allah, how many a small company has overcome a large company by permission of Allah, and Allah is with the patient.
Yeah, next.
And when they went forth to face Goliath and his soldiers, they said, "Our Lord, power upon us, patience, and plant firmly our feet and give us victory over the disbelieving people."
Okay. By the way, this is not Goliath, this is Jalut. 51, finish.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I thought David.
Okay. Oh, my God.
David knowing Goliath now.
Oh, heavens. So they defeated them by permission of Allah, and David killed Goliath, and Allah gave him the kingship and prophethood and taught him from that which he willed. And if it were not for Allah checking some people by means of others, the earth would have been corrupted. But Allah is full of bounty to the world.
So now...
Oh, glory to Islam.
So, Connie, are you ready to recite Shahada now?
Golly.
So basically, whoever raises a finger on these battles and wars and violences, they have to first look under their own, what do you call it, collar, neck? I don't know how to translate that.
Yeah, collar.
Yeah, you have to look into their own collar first and answer before they raise a finger. No, sorry, I added 5 more with that. But I wanted to give the whole story, buddy. Please, John, carry on.
Okay, can I just add one more thing to that? I'm sorry, John, for doing this.
Yes.
But if you're trying to combine, now you said this is, okay, we're in Quran chapter 2, and we're going from 46 to 51. This lines up with 1 Samuel chapter 8, you said, Adam?
Yes, sir. It lines up with 1 Samuel chapter number, 8 till 17.
Okay.
But like the story is not the same. You can see there is a distortion, there's stupidity.
And that's what I'm saying. This is why when we look at the Quran and we start pointing fingers and saying, look, we know the Quran is not from God because it's anachronistic. It has the wrong people at the wrong time and in the wrong place.
The wrong,
right, because you have Samaritans who lived, who didn't come into existence until 700 B.C., helping Aaron out with building the golden calf in 1400 B.C. It's just... This is another one. I'm gonna put this in my PowerPoint. All right, John, go ahead.
Wait, let me just chime in here real quick here. Eric, you just summed up Islam.
I what?
You just summed up Islam. You got people in the wrong time doing the wrong thing. Muslims want to live in the 14th century, and they're doing the wrong thing. You see what I'm saying? you literally just condensed Islam into a one phrase, into a one phrase or one sentence phrase. So.
That'd be the Quran. Yeah, and that's
Quran and
that,
Muslims,
right. And we've had people on the show before that will argue until their last breath. We've had Asana on here. We've had Kenny on here to say no, that's not what it means. That, you know, we're not having David wearing chain mail. Oh, it says rings of mail, but that's not chain mail, really? Okay, I'm sorry. Maybe I'm just thinking, reading a little bit too much into it. What is it then? Well, we really don't know. It's not very explicit. But I thought the Quran was cool. It's just like going around in a circle. It'll drive you crazy. John, help me out. Let's go.
Yeah, as we noticed, the verses in the Old Testament or Numbers 25, and even Quran, it was dedicated for a certain tribe who or a certain war happened like 3,500 years ago, and is not repeated. It happened, finished, done. There is no order to convert these people by force to Judaism or the religions of Allah or whatever. This is an Old Testament. I'll take another example. We spoke about it quickly in the book of Samuel, chapter 15, verse 3.
First Samuel chapter 15, which verse?
It's 3, but read it from the beginning.
Okay, we'll start in verse 1. It says, "Then Samuel said to Saul, 'The Lord sent me to anoint you as king over his people, over Israel. Now, therefore, listen to the words of the Lord. This is what the Lord of armies says. I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, in that he obstructed him on the way while he was coming up from Egypt. Now go and strike Amalek and completely destroy everything that he has, and do not spare him, but put him to death, both man and woman, child and infant, ox and sheep, camel and donkey.'"
Very good. Muslims like to take verse 3 without verse 2. Begin reading verse 3, "Now go and strike Amalek and kill. Look, the violence. There is nothing like that in Quran. Quran never said to kill a donkey, to kill animals. But they didn't read verse 2. Why did God order this war? Because if you go to Exodus 37, you find the story that the children of Israel were, Exodus 37.
37. That's what I thought. There's interesting verses there. And what verses?
Then
he made 2 cubits, now made an ark of clay, overlaid it, made poles, a cherub, the wings. This is talking about building the Ark of the Covenant, it looks like. Cast 4 dishes.
Maybe I'm mistaken for the number. Maybe.
I don't see it. I'm sorry, John. Maybe it is here. No, this just talks about the construction of seems the Ark of the Covenant.
Let me check. Maybe I'm a mistake.
It might. Let's go before the tabernacle underwritten. Maybe 35. Sabbath emphasized tabernacle.
Yeah, Ark. Exodus 17, not 37. 1:7 instead.
Okay, so 32 you said?
17.
Okay.
Yeah,
oh, here we are. Okay, yeah, this makes sense. Okay.
We go down a little.
There we go.
All what's happening, it's happening that children of Israel is going through, before going to Jordan River, passed through area with Amalek, and Amalek attacks them for no reason. They are passing. The promised land is not in this area, it's another area. And when they're passing, Amalek attacks them. We can read the passage.
Okay.
From verse 8.
Okay, I got it. All right. So then Amalek came and fought against Israel at Rephidim. Rephidim, that sounds about right. So Moses said to Joshua, "Choose men for us and go out, fight against Amalek. Tomorrow I will station myself on top of the hill with the staff of God in my hand." Joshua did as Moses told him and fought against Amalek, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. So it came about when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed, but when he let his hand down, Amalek prevailed, and Moses' hands were heavy. So they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and one on the other. So his hands were steady until the sun set, and Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword.
Yeah. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this in a book as a memorial, the rest of the verses. The rest of the verses saying that God promised, because of what Amalek did to Israel, God promised that he will, in one day, will completely punish all the Amaleks and remove them from the whole earth. This is in Exodus 17. And because of their attack to children of Israel, without any reason, they are just passing through Jordan before going to the promised land. And they attack them and make fight and war with them for no reason. And God made like prophecy, or he said that one day that all Amalekites will be disappear from earth. And this happened already in first book of Samuel, chapter 15, verse 15, when God ordered Shaul or Saul to go attack them and kill all Amalekites. Also, we notice here that it is just one tribe for single war, not repeated. Go fight them every day. It's just once a time, like 3,500 years ago. And there is no order to go convert them to the religion, to force them to go to another religion. It's just punishment. All what we see in the Old Testament is like that. The verses showing single war for a single tribe, and it's done, it's not repeated anymore, and there is no order to force people to join the religion. Let us go to Quran. We can get, for example, Surah 9, verse 29.
Oh boy. 9:29.
Yeah.
This is probably the most famous verse.
Yeah, because it's related to us.
Yeah. Okay. Do you want me to read it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Before we may I interrupt a little we go there.
Go ahead.
Because a specific verse was added over here from Bible, which they proclaim that even the animals were killed. Why were the animals killed? There is so much violence in the etc. 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 If you read Quran,
sorry, that was my fault. I accidentally turned something on.
You're always up to something, Stephen. I tell you, it's eating popcorn, cooking, or what? You know.
If you read Quran chapter number 26, verse number 160 to 171, we will see that Allah destroyed city named Sodom and Gomorrah. Allah doesn't talk about Sodom and Gomorrah, unfortunately. We just know that it is Sodom and Gomorrah from Bible. Allah says the people of Lot, people of Lut, by the way, Lut is a prophet according to Islam. So, destroyed that city. Allah doesn't know about the city. And he flipped it upside down. Now, the problem is, what happened there? My question to all these Muslims who actually come in, even though that I have shown the passages already from Quran, but what happened to that city? It removed all the animals and the kids and the babies and the girls and everyone out of the city before flipping it upside down?
He did what to the city? He flipped it upside down.
He destroyed it. You'll see in the Tafsir, he flipped it upside down. Other Tafsir will say he put another mountain on top of it. Third will say that he will throw fire from the sky. So nobody knows what he did, but, you know, there is a lot of consensus on that. So let's just say Allah destroyed the city. Let's not say flip it, okay? For the sake of argument. And Allah said very clearly that we only saved him, i.e. Lot, and his family, except an old woman, which is the wife of Lot, among those who remained behind. So Allah destroyed everyone, except some people. Allah doesn't even know there are four people or five people or whatever. So, you know, Allah is very, very concise in stating certain things. So, but like, what happened to the rest of the city? The kids, the boys, the babies, the donkeys, the sheep, the mule, the mouse, and everyone.
I would think that a benevolent Allah would not harm anything that was innocent, and all of them and the bunny rabbits and all of that would survive.
How? Allah said in 71 verse of Quran of chapter number 26, Allah was very clear. I just saved just those people. like what we see, when these Muslims comes up, point one finger at the Bible, they have literally four fingers, okay, at least three fingers pointing at them. At them. So when we talk about these things, they need to first be very sure that even in the contextual historical evidences, they need to first realize why. Because there is a reasoning. And when we talk the loot, from a loot, we know why. So if that was okay with them, why do they have problem with Ammonites or Gideonites? If the Lot city of Lot or the people of Lot or Qom al-Lut is okay with these Muslims, why do they have problem with Ammonites, Gideonites, and all these knights?
Well, what's happening is they're just trying to justify the violence that you find in the Quran because you find it in the Bible. And so what they're doing is they're trying to denigrate the Bible. Say, look, they're in the Bible. You guys have just as
Thank
much
you.
Violence here in the Quran.
Thank you. And now comes 929. You know, that is why I came brought to this. Thank you. So now what is, those were past in history, and these Muslims agree with that. Now we need to say, what is the Hadood Allah for now, for after Muhammad, forever till the day of judgment? Now you bring up 929. That is forever and ever. Yes, brother.
Can I just say one thing?
Go ahead.
Thank you. The thing to remember too is that with the Amorites, you know, like Adam mentioned it, you know, that God told Abraham the sins of the Amorites is not full yet. So the Amorites will have 400 more years of grace before God has to judge their sins. But the thing about it, the reason they were judged by God is for their sins. And the thing is that they could say, well, why does God do this to these people? Well, look what God did to the Jews when their sins were full. He sent the Babylonians against them because God judged on their sins. And when the Israelites sinned to their level, God sent the Babylonians. And it says, read in Lamentations, that in Lamentations it says, the things that were done to Jerusalem have never been done to any people. And so that the judgment of God is always based on sins. And so when the Amorites' sins were full, God judged them. And when the Jews' sins were full, God judged them too. So, you know, it's based on sins, not just, you know, who they are or what group they are or what religion they are.
I'm going to interject if I can real quick just to follow up on that. Think about how patient God is. I don't know how long suffering is. I did cut out because my phone died on me and stuff, and so I didn't hear the first probably 30 minutes of the show. So I don't know if you've covered Genesis, where God says to Abraham, I am giving you this land. He shows it to them, but not for 400 years, okay? All right?
Can we show Genesis 15?
Okay, yeah. So in other words, because the sins of the Amalekites, those living in the land, have not yet reached their zenith, okay?
Yep.
Their plateau. So again, each and every case where God says, go out and destroy them, okay, it is because their sin has reached their zenith. It has reached the full measure, okay? And God raises up nations, even wicked, sinful nations, to punish his people. Exactly. This is what people are not understanding, okay? But I am not a guy that says it's the end of the world today. Honestly, the end of the world could be in 1,000 years from now. I mean, it could take that long. That is how patient God is. But what I am seeing right now, people, is God raising up sinful and wicked people, okay? Okay? For its destruction. And there are Christians out there, I don't know. I mean, I know some of you, you know, blah, blah, blah. But you know, if you're listening and you're one of these, you know, the tribulation, I'll be sucked up to heaven, I got news for you. Psalm 113, my favorite verse, I think it's Psalm 113, I should know it, but it's the last psalm. This is on their way after God destroyed his people with a wicked nation. They are being led out. The righteous remnant who just suffered through this horrible thing. And the Babylonians are mocking them, saying, oh, sing us a song of Jerusalem. You know, while they're at the water, at the river, okay? And they sing dirge at the end. Blessed will you be who dashes your little one's heads against the rocks. For the Babylonians were blessed by God to do what they did. What, you know what I mean? Now, it does say they went too far in a certain extent. But here, God is saying, yeah, you did this to us. We suffered. But my point is on this, that these are the righteous remnant that suffered through all this. And they're telling this nation that was raised up, no, it's going to happen to you, and it did happen to them. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay? Everything is for his purpose. So, I don't know. I'm turning your page there. Sorry.
No, it's a great point, because a lot of times, we don't look at Scripture in its entirety. And Muslims and Christians can be just as guilty as this also with the Quran at times, but more often than not they're going to look at that, and what does it say? We're going to the has the internal living in the house. Now, what did you say is going to strike their head against a rock? Is that in there? I don't think that's in that.
That's Psalm 137.
Yeah, 137. Oh, okay.
Kind of right. I had the right number.
All right. I was looking at it, but I mean, it's they're going to say, well, look at there. That's violent, but it doesn't have. They don't provide any context to the verse at all, and what's going on surrounding and what the purpose of it is. So when we look at 9:29, John, we see something completely different.
Before 9:29, sorry. Now that these things have come up, I need to push back 9:29 again. Sorry to say that. Sorry. Can you first open 3:151?
The Quran 3:151 is what you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. One. Whoopsie. Come on. Doggone it. I can't. I'm left-handed, and I'm trying to operate the mouse with a pen in my hand. And the mouse, okay, 3:151?
3:151, sir.
Okay, let's go ahead and read this. We will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve for what they have. What?
Cast what?
Terror.
Your pronunciation was so polite that it didn't seem like terror.
We will cast terror into the hearts of those who disbelieve for what they have associated with Allah, a little shirk of which he had not set down any authority, and their refuge will be the fire, and wretched is the residence of the wrongdoers.
So Allah is going to do what? He said he will cast terror into the hearts of who doesn't believe in Allah. So now this is what a continuation, a hadood of Allah, that Allah is going to cast terror. And how does Allah cast terror? Go read chapter number 40, verse number 85. Just leave the text over there. I'm going to go through a couple of verses before
40,
I give the mic to John.
85?
Chapter number 40, verse number 85.
Chapter 40, verse 785. Where's Isa when we need him? Is he here? He's here. He's okay. But never did their faith benefit them once they saw our punishment. It is this.
Our doom, right? So you're again reading Say International. I don't know what's up with you and Say International. Okay, throw it on the screen, buddy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah. Let me read Pickthall, because doom is in Pickthall. Okay, but their faith could not avail them when they saw our doom. This is Allah's law, which hath ever taken course for his bondmen, and then the disbelievers will be ruined.
So what is this? This is the law of Allah, okay? That none of your faith will save you. But as soon as you see the doom of Allah, as soon as you see the qahr of Allah, somebody can give me a better translation for that? Okay, so they will actually be shivering, and their faith will not be able to save them. Now let's read chapter number 8, verse number 57.
857, chapter, verse 57. Bada bing, bada boom. I'm going to read Pickthall again. If thou comest on them in the war, deal with them so as to strike fear into those who are behind them, that haply they may remember.
Yeah, pray, remember. So you are in a battle. What do you have to do? You have to be so destructive, tabahkun, you know, that even the people behind them will be terrified and they will feel terrorized. Right? So Allah is so clear in a lot of other verses. I wanted to bring up more, for example, 6151, 9111, 43, 442, 286, 635, 8125, 2216, 9120, 4614, 4139, 474. But I think these four are more than sufficient for now. And then let's see, what is Allah, who is Allah talking about? Who are those people that Allah is talking about over here in these few verses that I've shown already? Are they, who are they? Is it forever and ever? Now let's go to 920.
Okay, Adam, can you do me a favor and type those verses into chat or private chat, either or, because I want to take a look at those myself.
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, John, we're going to go to 929, finally. 929. They made a song about that, come to think about it. I can't remember what the name of the song was. Okay. Do you want me to go ahead and read this, John?
Yeah, please, please.
Okay. Sahih International. Fight those who do not believe in Allah or in the last day and do not consider unlawful what Allah and his messenger have made unlawful, and who do not adopt the religion of truth from those who were given the scripture. Fight until they give the jizya willingly while they are humbled. Some other translations say brought low, some say subdued, but I'm not going to expound any more than that. Go ahead, John.
It means that if they pay the jizya, they are lowered or humiliated.
Right.
It's an Arabic taghirun. It means humiliated. It's okay. We see here in these verses a big difference between Old Testament or the violence in Old Testament and this verse or the violence in Quran. It's not related to a certain tribe. It's related to all people of the book like us. And it is not... in Old Testament, there is no order to force people or to attack people till they join the religion. Here, no, fight them till they become Muslims or join the religion of the truth or pay the jizya, which is means there is forcing in people to join Islam. Here we see the difference between the violence in Old Testament and Quran. Quran is unlimited. From time of Muhammad till these verses can be, it's continued till now and till whatever. And also it's related by forcing people to join Islam. And if you go to Tafsir, like Tafsir Ibn Kathir, you can see like a confirmation about what I said. With people, Muslims, you say, no, it's in the time of the war. When there is war between Muslims and other religions, these verses apply. No, this is not true. It is applied since day of Muhammad and Umar ibn al-Khattab. It applied, and it was applied all the time till maybe till the 19th century.
The 19th century was applied. The ISIS applied it. That's the first thing they did. They started making people pay the jizya.
Yeah. If we have like the history of the religion of Islam at the beginning, Muhammad was in Mecca. He was like cute and telling people, I have my religion, you have your religion. And let us live in peace. And when no one believed in him, many people, just like 100 people believed in Muhammad in 13 years, less than 10 persons every year. When he didn't find any support from his family, his tribe, Quraysh, he went to Medina. And the way of verses revealed to him, way of verses of Quran, changes. All of these verses become like attacks, war, go fight. Even Surah 9, verse 5, either for the pagans of Quraysh, either to convert to Islam or to be killed. There is no other option. There is no jizya for the pagans. Either to be a Muslim or to be killed. There is no jizya. All these verses, it wasn't in the last stage of Islam, and it continued like that. It doesn't stop. It didn't return back to the good or peaceful speech. Then it's like abrogation. The verses, the peaceful verses, abrogated with the war and fight verses. Then we should, Muslims should use these verses as the final revelation from God to Muhammad in Medina and after Medina. And we can see that in Tafsir ibn Kathir. If you open Tafsir ibn Kathir for Surah 9:29,
I don't know if I have that.
Umar ibn Khattab make use of it, made something called back to Umar. We spoke about that many times, but let us share Tafsir ibn Kathir. If you can bring it.
I don't have the... well, hold on. Maybe I do. Let me see. Tafsir. Sunnah. No.
Let me give you that.
I think I got it.
Which one do you want? Quranix? Which one do you want?
Yeah, Quranix. It's okay.
Which one?
Surah 929.
929. Okay. Same verse. Okay. There you go. The link, Mr. Eric Zakafar. It's in the private chat.
It's in the private chat. Okay. There we go. Yes, continue. Drag it over here. Bring it up on the screen. Make sure I... God, this is... Why do they have to make this so difficult? Okay. Well, what happened?
This is not what I sent. Copy the link again.
Mamma mia. Okay, copy. Doggone it. Tab. Okay.
Go down Tafsir ibn Kathir.
Jalain Kathir. Okay, here's what it says. Idolaters are no longer allowed into al-Masjid al-Haram. Allah commands his believing servants, who are pure in religion and person, to expel the idolaters who are filthy in the religious sense from al-Masjid al-Haram. After the revolution...
This is verse 28. But if we go down, can reach the back to Umar, because there is, go down more.
Okay, it says, and feel themselves subdued. This ayah means that, is this what you wanted? Where it says, and feel themselves subdued?
Back to Umar, down, maybe. Little down. Yeah.
Okay, what is this dinging? Is this my computer? Is this... Okay, somebody is on Skype. Whoever's on Skype, please stop. You're giving me a headache. Okay.
Yeah, here. This is back to Umar. No, little up.
That's the bottom right there. To Stari.
Scroll back up, Eric. Scroll back up. Up, Eric.
Up little.
Right there?
Not down. Up.
Yeah.
To the very top. There you go.
No.
The very
up
top
the
of the page.
Yeah, just second. Yeah, here.
This is the very bottom of the page, and you want me to go back up?
Go up a little. Tafsir ibn Kathir, yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, this area. That. No. Can you go a little down? Sorry. If you go down, back to Omar.
If you don't mind, may I share my screen?
Yeah, go ahead, because I'm messing this up. I'm sorry.
Okay, there you go.
Okay.
Can you please show my screen?
There you go.
There you go, buddy. Okay. As I said, okay. Masjid al-Haram this year. The eye indicates the idolaters are impure. Okay. This. Yep. And Muhammad's people. Okay. We have bounty. Inna wa muzakhirun. Daya means, okay, in Allah al-Hakim, his actions. Okay, now, qatal al-lazina al-ayyum.
Yeah, this is the verse Allah is talking about.
Yep.
Okay.
I'm going to show that. Anyhow, fair enough. Qatal al-lazina al-ayyumin una billahi wa bil yawmi al-akhir. This is the one?
Yeah, go down a little.
Paying jizya is a sign of kufr and disgrace. Boy, that's wonderful.
Exactly. That's what I say that always. It's like humiliation text.
Yeah.
Well,
enemies. Yep. Okay, do not even intimate the salam to Jews and Christians if they meet you in the road and force them to the lowest, narrowest alley. This is the one that you want to show.
Yes, yes, but there are conditions of back to Omar.
No, not in the English one. You have to go to the Arabic. So do you want me to open the Arabic one?
No, it's a little clear on Arabic. Who will ask that? Okay. Here we showing the meaning of that you pay the idea and are humiliated.
Yeah, that's so,
yeah.
This is the one. This is disgrace, humiliation, littered, and therefore, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Hold on. Hold on. Just here's the pack of Omar. Is this what you wanted? This is the English form of it.
Yeah, but it's in the Kathir. Why is not appearing here?
Yeah, because they do not translate the whole Tafsir Ibn Kathir. The whole thing is that Ibn Kathir only translated 40% of it. The other 60% they hide, which is in Arabic. So, but like if you see this, the humiliation is shown.
Mm-hmm.
Examples of humiliation appears in Back of Omar exactly.
Exactly. And it is in the Arabic as well. Not in the English version of Ibn Kathir.
Okay. Let us see back to Omar if you can. Eric, please.
Hold on. Yep. Let me show. There you go.
Okay. Is there anything specifically you want me to cover here, John?
No, just we see like two, three items of back to Omar to understand what it means by humiliated. To what extent? Because the humiliated or humble, it's like wide range. From back to Omar, it's application for Surah
9:29. Show the tafsir again, please. You will see some of the part over here. First, read from here and then go there, because then you will make a consensus. So, Christianity is such and such city. When Muslim came, we requested our children property for. And followers of our religion, we made a condition on ourselves that we will neither erect our areas a monastery, church, or a sanctuary,
mm-hmm.
or a monk, nor restore any place of worship that needs restoration, nor use any of them for the purpose of enmity against Muslims. We will not prevent any Muslim from resting in our churches, whether they come by day or night, and we will open the doors of our house for worship for wayfarer and passerby. So these are the Christian and Jews that they have to do for Muslims. Those Muslims who come as guests, we will enjoy boarding and food for 3 days. We will not allow a spy against Muslims into our churches and homes or hide deceit or betrayal against Muslims. We will not teach our children the Quran, publicize practice of shirk, invite anyone to shirk, or prevent any of our followers from embracing Islam. If they choose to do so, they will respect Muslims. Move from places, we will sit in it if they choose to sit in them. We will not intimate their clothing, apps, turbans, sandals, hairstyles, speech, nicknames, title, names, rights, sandals, hang swords on our shoulders. Collect weapons of any kind or carry them, these weapons. We will not interrupt our stamps in Arabic or sell liquor. We will have the front of our haircut, wear our customary clothes wherever we are, wear belts around our waist, so these are specific belts that we're giving them. Refrain from erecting cross on the outside of our churches and demonstrate them on our books in public. So you will not have see any cross in there at all. In the Muslim wayfair and markets as well. We will not sound the bells in our churches, except discreetly, or raise our voice while reciting the holy books inside our churches in the presence of Muslims. Nor raise our voices with prayer at our funeral or light torches in the funeral procession in the fairways of Muslims or their markets. We will not bury our dead next to Muslims' dead or buy servants who were captured by Muslims. We will be guide for Muslims and refrain from breaching their privacy in their homes. When I gave this document to Umar, he added, we will not beat any Muslim. They are the conditions that we set against ourselves. So this is like a very, very generic fact.
Well, this is back to Omar. This is what is said, what is called the pact of Omar. Yeah, it's, and it's applied to many regions, many places. I mean by this that verse, Surah 9:29, it's not dedicated for certain time. It's after Muhammad, and it's applied after Muhammad by Omar bin Khattab himself, like 30 years after Muhammad, and continued long time till ISIS applied it. And we see it's not punishment. In Old Testament, all the verses was punishment to people doing sin. Here, there is no punishment. It is either join Islam or be emulated this way. You can build a new church. The old church leaves them to fall down or collapse. You have like a certain different type of clauses that anyone can know you in the street. This is Christian, this is not Christian, and you should pay the jizya, and you go, it's written in the books, go like bending yourself down to the earth, like bowing down to pay the jizya for the Muslims, the ruler of the country. All this stuff, it's showing that these verses is not for time war. It's continued. If you'd like to continue in Christianity, pay the jizya and be emulated this way. If you'd like to go to Islam, yeah, it will be one of the Muslims, and there is no problem with you. And, it is not dedicated for one single war. No, it's continued forever. This is the difference between violence in Old Testament. Violence in Old Testament was punishment. No, in Quran, it was not punishment. It was forcing people to join Islam. It's forcing. The verse of no compulsion of religion, it's abrogated. It's eliminated. We can't apply it anymore. It was in Mecca before Hijra to Medina. And after Medina, the new faith of Islam appeared, like attacking people, attacking other religions, forcing people to join Islam by wars. And if you read Tafsir al-Qurtubi, for example, there is no compulsion of religion, Surah 2, verse 256, that Qurtubi said this is abrogated because Muhammad forced Arabs to join Islam, forced. And he said that clearly. This verse is abrogated. But in Arabic. You know, Qurtubi is in Arabic. Yeah,
you know, Brother John, I just want to say that Father Zechariah was on Hatun Tash's live stream earlier this week. And he said something I never heard before. He said that, you know, when they went to Egypt, you know, Ibn al-As, you know, he went to Egypt, and he gave him the three things. He said, you either convert to Islam, or you pay the jizya, or you be killed. That they did that, you know, and there was lots of very rich Christians who were sending money to the caliph. And Ibn al-As was taking a big portion of it too, but they were sending lots of money. So when the Christians refused to convert to Islam, they would send their money instead. They would pay the jizya. But what happened is a lot of the Christians just said, okay, we'll convert to Islam. And when they did that, that stopped the money flow.
Yeah.
So they eliminated the convert to Islam. They said, you just got to pay the jizya. Even if you're a Muslim, you got to pay the jizya because they wanted the money. So I never heard that before, but he said
that.
Yeah,
this story is true. And Egyptians remain, majority are as Christians, about 400 years after the invasion of Islam. Till about 1,200, it begins the majority to be Muslims. Before that, the majority were Christians for like 5 or 6 centuries. Because of this reason, Amr ibn al-As, who invaded Egypt, was one of the companions of Muhammad, invaded Egypt. He was telling people either to join Islam or pay jizya. They pay jizya because there were a lot of people, a lot of Christians were rich at this time. They paid, but there are some people who are poor, converted to Islam, but this doesn't, Amr ibn As doesn't like that, and he ordered no conversions anymore to take them in.
Okay, can I ask a question here? Can I ask a question here? Because I've heard the common objection by Muslims is that the jizya was paid by the non-Muslims because, number one, they were receiving protection by the Muslim. I get it. Okay, they were receiving protection by the Muslims. And that they were not allowed or were not able to serve in the army, that this would cover that protection. I'm just telling you the number of people that I interact with on Facebook, they come up with the most outlandish and stupid things, but this is one of their objections.
That's the objection which destroys this objection itself. Number one. Who are they afraid of?
Exactly. Who is protecting from who? It's like the mob. It was mentioned in chat.
Yeah, and who took their swords to begin with? So they took their sword. They attacked them. They took their sword. So who is so, dude, and then once again, if you read the Quran, forget every other book in the world. If you read the Quran, it says it is humiliation. And the word is described so clearly. وَهُمْ صَاغِرُونَ How do you describe the word صَاغِرُونَ? Check this out. Humiliation, but once again, how is this? Ibn Kathir is saying it. Open my screen again, please. وَهُمْ صَاغِرُونَ What does it say? And they feel themselves abused. That is the pure translation. But then we say dismissed, humiliated, belittled.
Yep. Say that again. Disgraced, humiliated, and belittled. People, seriously, this is not a religion. This is a political system. You can throw this in any dictatorial thing, okay? You can give it to communists. You can give it to the Nazis. You can give it to whatever. The DNC. Yes, exactly. Yes, that's my moment. No, seriously, it is. They're following this. They are rubbing everything in our face. They're disgraced, humiliated. This is what they want us to be. Okay? We are their dhimmies. I'm just arguing about politically wise, but no. What I'm saying is this: Muhammad, Islam. I mean, this is political genius. This really is, but it doesn't do with religion. Okay? It's like Mein Kampf, which you can buy on Amazon, but you can't buy Tarkus's book. Okay, hold on. Mein Kampf. You know what Mein Kampf means? Mein Kampf is mein Jihad. Mein struggle. Yep.
My struggle.
Exactly. He says everything he's going to do a decade and a half before he does it. They go to publish it in France. A French guy gets it, publishes it, and starts spreading it. What are you going to do? They sue in European court and win. The Nazis win and say, you can't publish this. Think about that. Now, look at the Quran. They say, no, you can't read the Quran. It is illegal to translate the Quran. Again, it is a universal. It's like pi. It's like an infinite. It's like an infinite number is always the square root of negative one, which equals negative one. I mean, seriously, it is universal. You know what I mean? But in a religion, it's definitely.
Yeah, I saw you take the fifth. Today, I just couldn't do that because of this topic. Now, the problem is John Isaac was a Muslim. I was a Muslim. As a Muslim, we know very well that jizya in our eastern part of the world is never described as protection tax. This is a blunt, blatant, white lie or black lie. I don't know what you call it in English. So, that these Western people they say to you that jizya is a protection tax. It is a blatant lie, nothing more. Go to the West, go to the country, Islamic country, and you will know how they they actually talk about jizya in their mosques. Every single mosque, when they talk about jizya, they talk about humiliation. They say the words in their own language about the worst word that could use in the mosque for the humiliating word. Like humiliation in the English word is not very humiliating in itself. So the words that they use over there, it's the Western Islam that they're proclaiming is nothing more than a lie. John Isaac tell you what they say in their mosques.
I would like to add something in history for the jizya, because Muslims say the jizya is very small amount. And very little amount anyone can pay it. Poor people are like, they don't pay. This all are complete lies. We have a lot of history. I'll mention one of them. It's the invasion, of the Arabic invasion to Egypt. For the writer is Alfred Bettler, and he wrote that the Coptic Pope was responsible for collecting the jizya for probably monks and priests. Most of the monks and priests don't work. Then he takes the donation coming to the Pope and collect all this money and give to the rulers, the Egyptian rulers. Many years he couldn't pay. And what was the result? So the guy could pay the jizya for monks. There are many monks in Egypt, many priests in Egypt. Couldn't collect the money. What was the result? The result, he was put in the prison. The Coptic was put in the prison many times, not one time. Many times, beginning from Abdullah ibn Sa'd ibn Abi Farh, who came after Amr ibn al-As. Amr ibn al-As was fair enough. He was good with the Coptic Pope at this time, but as soon as he died and became after him Abdullah ibn Sa'd ibn Abi Farh, he put the Coptic Pope many years in the prison. It is because the jizya is too much. People can pay. And if you read the same book, you find that many people left Egypt and go to Europe, go like a nation running from the Islamic invasion. And the population of Egypt go down from 20 million at the time of invasion of Islam, 20 million to 0 million to 3 million after 200 years. Population goes down from 20 million to 3 million after 200 years. Because of the jizya, because of population, and it was much worse than what happened before from Romans who were invading the Egyptians or Egypt. And this is history, what history says. But Muslims say something else.
And also, if you want to talk about history, also read the history of Indo-Pak. When Muslims attacked India, they did 32 battles to conquer India because they couldn't do that. They couldn't do that in one battle. And when they conquered India, because of jizya and all the lowest tribes, the Shudras and the Kshatriya, the Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaish, and the Shudras were the first ones to accept it. Why? Because they didn't have money to pay jizya. So they were lowest of the caste. They didn't have enough money. And they had to convert because they couldn't pay. And then all of these Muslimin who attacked Indo-Pak, don't you know how Sarah, they have in their khana, their zanan khana, which is like the woman area, zanan khana, they had so many women over there which were Hindus and Sikhs. Because they were Malakatalin, they were the right hand possessed. They raped them, they left, right, and center. Hundreds of the concubines. And then we also read that they have those people who were encapsulated. Is that the right word? When you cut the male or part of that, you call that?
Castrated.
Castrated?
Yeah, in X. Yes, something like that.
Cut your balls, dude. Go ahead. That's what we said. Go ahead.
Thank you for that.
Both the men who who were allowed to go into the Narankhana, and those were the only men who can go to that area because they do not have a thing to do anything. So that's how they actually ran their kingdom for more than 100 years or more. So you Westerners come here and tell us about our history. That's just stupidity. So, yeah, that's what I would like to say.
Okay.
Yes, Unix XYZ said that.
Unix, yeah, that's the eunuch, yeah. Okay, there's a couple things that were mentioned here that I just want to touch on that when we start talking about the Pack of Umar, because we've done several shows on the Pack of Umar and discussing what it requires non-Muslims to do and paying the jizya, of course, is that. And then you went through that long list of you can't ring church bells. You have to give your seat up to a Muslim if he wants it, Rosa Parks much. And the one thing that really stands out to me is not allowing non-Muslims into Mecca. The Monday night show on this network, they have a picture of two guys have gotten off their motorcycle, and they're in Saudi Arabia, and there's off-ramp signs, and it says Mecca, and then it says Muslims, and then non-Muslims. So when you talk about ethnic cleansing, not allowing an entire people group into a certain region of your country, I find that an abomination in the year 2021.
Because Muhammad said so. What did you say otherwise? Muhammad said on his dying bed, remove every pagan from the holy city. And that was done. And once that was done, how can they let anybody back in?
Well, it's an abomination is what it is. And it doesn't matter if Muhammad said it. It doesn't matter if Allah said it. Out of any type of standard of human decency, it's an abomination. And when I start thinking about that and trying to process this and trying to process what Western Muslims tell us today and how open and free and loving and kind Islam is, and you just bring up this one fact, it's like they can't run away from it fast enough. And I find it disgusting.
Eric, I just want to throw in real quick on that. Okay, this is not my 2 minutes, but real quick, I know from when I worked in the oil and gas industry, like almost over a decade ago, all right, Mecca, they would smuggle in, okay, under cover of darkness, because they went in that big building project then, okay, and they couldn't get enough Muslims to do the construction work, so they would smuggle in under darkness, okay, to work on the building project. So, yeah, so the whole thing is, complete BS.
Yeah, that makes sense. If you don't have enough builders, you got to bring in the Kafir who actually, and I wonder it doesn't matter. And then there was just one of the things in that, and then I'll be done. We were talking about the, I think Rob posted in chat about the minimum tax for the jizya. And if you go to Reliance of the Traveler on page 608, it says the minimum non-Muslim poll tax is 1 dinar, or what it says here is 4.23 grams of gold per person, which is about a half ounce of gold if you really want to get to it. So you're talking about today's cost, about $1,000 per person, and that would be per year to receive protection from Muslims. So it's and it was mentioned in chat there, and I saw it. It's like the mafia with the God is what it's like. So when we think of violence in the Quran, when we think of the complete and utter humiliation of non-Muslims when they're conquered, and when we start talking about, well, we don't want Sharia in our countries, we're the bad guys. Okay, does anybody have anything else? We're down to 3 minutes left in the show. They're building Mecca to hide the fact that there's no history there. Yep, we got it, Rob.
No, I finished. If someone would like to ask something, it would be
okay. I want to conclude on this.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, we're going to let Rad close up. Now, Rad, never mind. You just go on ahead. I'm just bracing myself.
Okay, all right. No, seriously. Okay, I'm being violence in the Quran versus the Bible. In the Bible, there are prescriptive things of violence. Go to Judges. I don't know if anybody wrote Judges. We'll often go to that. Okay. But when God ordains this violence, it is against a specific people, a specific place, and in a specific time, and for a specific reason. Okay? It means what I call the Negan properties, or the Negan qualities. If you ever watched the, you know, Walking Dead series, Negan is the best character there is, but that's beside the point. Until he turned into a total wimp and I lost interest in the show. But no, that sums it up, okay? It's not that you kill someone. You have to kill the right person at the right time and in the right way. This is common sense, okay? And this is human nature. The first city was founded by the person who slew his own brother after the fall. Think about that for a second. The city is a civilization. That's where we're coming together. That's where we're creating laws. And it's founded by a murderer, okay, who murdered his own brother, okay? All right? Anyway, bottom line is this, okay? God ordains the killing, okay, of a certain people at a certain place in a certain time. And not to get booty, now we're going to contrast the Quran. The Quran ordains killing of anyone at any time in any place, okay, if they are not a Muslim. Or tax them. In other words, the method may be the same, but the reasons and the outcome are completely different. Does that make sense? Okay? In other words, if I tell you to, you know, rob someone, and if they resist, kill them, or they don't submit, and they don't give me money, and, you know, then kill them or oppress them or whatever, okay? As opposed to God saying, I just took you out of Egypt. I just destroyed all of Pharaoh's armies. I just did all this for you. Now I'm telling you to go do this thing to the other dude. You know what I mean? You're going to say no to that? You're going to say, you just witnessed that? You're going to say, yeah, I don't think so. I'm not going to listen to that God. You see what I'm saying? Okay? So it's a difference in motive. It's a difference in implementation. I mean, it's a total opposite of everything, okay, that the Bible has against violence, okay, or for violence, and what the Quran has for violence and against violence. It's a complete opposite. And that's all I wanted to say. Oh, and by the way, never mind.
What, do we have a new sponsor, Rad?
Yeah, we're coming up with one. I gotta get with Issa because he's got the voices, so yeah.
Okay, well, you know, I'll tell you what I'm tired of. I'm tired of being completely dependent on all those Jews that bring me buckets of money every week when I do this show. I need to have some type of legitimate form of income. I've been actually accused of that. Working for
Jews.
The Mossad.
They're not Jews. They're Jews. You gotta pronounce it.
Well, whoever they are, they're not bringing me buckets of money. They're not bringing me anything other than a bunch of Greeks.
Hey, Eric, I need that money as well because like they are saying that I've been getting money from Christians, not Jews. So you are a Christian. So when are you going to send me money? And even Radical is a Christian, and Connie is a Christian, and John Isaac. All of you are Christians. Come on, send money to me.
I ain't gonna send you money, but if you got a product to sell, I'll buy it. I'm just saying, or you know what I mean, or investment in an opportunity. By the way, go ahead.
Just accepted Christ. You know, I left Islam, so that's why they say that.
I got an uncle I just found out in Nigeria, okay? Seriously, you know what I'm saying? I mean, yeah, you know.
Man, all of these Christians in the comment section, they also have to pay me money because they have to fulfill the words of all these Muslimin, remember? Like, these Muslimin coming up and saying, hey, Adam, you have been paid by the Christians and the pastors. All these pastors, they need to hear my voice. They need to pay me now so that they could make the words of the Muslimin true.
Exactly. Well, you let me know when that happens, and I'll convert to reconvert to Christianity. And yeah, you can get that Jew money or Christian money, seriously.
This is funny. We can impose the jizya on each other. So that would be...
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Everybody, again, thank you for coming this week. This has, again, been a lot of fun. I can see the lamenting going on there. Why is this only an hour and a half? We do 2 hours on Sunday. We do an hour and a half on Tuesday evenings. But I have a class after the show tonight. So that starts here in 27 minutes. We might be able to start being able to do 2 hours.
Both of your days combined sometimes are not equal to one of my live stream. You do know that, right?
Yeah,
well,
live streams like 3 or 4 times.
Okay, you know.
When I tune in, he's talking some foreign language. I'm like, yeah, screw that.
Okay, if you look, I'm a little bit older than you probably, and I work hard. Okay, look, if you have to teach 35 kids for 4 or 5 periods every day, you're going to be tired too. So I'm worried. I'm wore out when I get home. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. That was horrible, brother. No, seriously, that would be all. I think, like, honestly, so I went and I volunteered at this daycare, for my nephews and stuff. Like, yeah. And that didn't go well because I was like, dude, you little kids are monsters. I can't imagine doing preteen teenagers, man. I mean, I'd be like, well, you were saying that you got to send the girls into the office. I'd be like, no, change the clothes, no. And even the boys, I'd be like, no, ain't doing that, no. You know what I mean? You guys don't see this. I am seriously in favor of school uniforms.
See, but,
except for the bizarre reason that the school uniforms on the girls, I mean, they make it the skirts real short. You know what I mean? I'm like, you're just defeating the purpose. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? How do you control this teenage boy, okay? How can you grasp that attention when there's a girl sitting next to him that he's like, my hormones and everything and my whole biological thing, my godly thing, you know what I mean? How do you do that? I am for separating boys and girls in junior high school at least, dude. I'm just saying.
There's classroom management processes that you go through to take. We can talk about that offline. It's really not that hard to do, but you're right. I mean, it is terrifying some days. When some days you just feel like you're playing whack-a-mole. You know, once you get done with one, then you got to move to the other. And you know, when they come into the class, they're like, Dr. Smith, I need this. Can I go to the bathroom? I need a pencil. Can I get some paper? Can I get, what book are we under? And you're just like, shut your mouth. I got this. So, all right. So anyway, that's why I'm a bit fatigued in the evenings. Okay, guys, again. All right. All right. I'm not going to complain. Thank you for coming. Thank you for your contributions today. It was a lot of fun, John. I appreciate you leading us this evening, and your help. Also, all those different ideas, Adam, were just absolutely phenomenal. And Rad, we always appreciate your commentary, Connie, in coming tonight. And Issa, you're always welcome, even though you didn't say much tonight, because you're always lagging. You got to get some better comms, man. It doesn't matter. Okay, and everybody in chat, thank you for coming tonight and posting in there. It's always interesting to hear everybody's contributions when we do this. We will be here next Tuesday evening, once again, on Radio Free Kafiristan. God bless everybody. We'll see you then.
End the live, dude, on YouTube.
Yeah, I know. I made sure I ended it tonight because – and I looked at the – hold on. Let me end it on Blog Talk Radio. End episode. Uh-oh.